Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Now the grass is kind of angry at us, though.
Cool beans. Onward, ho. Let's talk to the trees.
Oh.
I wonder if those women realize how famous they are. I wonder. I don't know. They're probably too busy talking to the grass to really know.
Well, I think it's angry at them.
Yeah.
So they need to talk to the trees.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I can never get it quite right. Anyway, welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Unpredictable conversations galore. You could be one of them if you give me a call at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Let's talk to Emmanuel in Paramus, New Jersey, home of the Paramus Mall.
Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Emmanuel.
Hey, Patrick. Long-time listener. I actually needed an IRS document, and that's what I had to do. I had to go to ID Me, and then, you know, you wait for them to call you on FaceTime, and then you FaceTime them. You got to show your ID and the whole nine. Take a picture, yeah.
But what also, is that
I had one
for?
Quick question.
Well, before you go on, because I didn't know about this system, and I mean, I didn't know about the IRS doing this until a few days ago when the story came out. Did they give you any rationale like, oh, hey, here's why you have to do this now? Or did they just say, here's what you have to do, and there was no explanation?
Yeah, they didn't say why, but my accountant told me it's more, you know, I guess, so like to prevent fraud and stuff.
What if you had worn a mask? They probably would not have liked that, would they?
Probably not.
So it leads me to ask this question. I'm not asking you, Emmanuel, but it's a, you know, it's just a question. Does this mean biometric facial recognition as opposed to just saying, yeah, that looks like him? You know, where you eyeball somebody's picture and you say, yeah, that looks like him. I wonder if this already is or is going to be the biometric scanning where it's, you know, facial recognition software that determines definitively whether or not you're the person you claim to be. So that will be very interesting to see. I have a feeling it's going to happen.
Sure. Me too.
All right.
Me too. So my question is, I got this one Christian friend that says that, oh, Sunday's not really the Sabbath, that it's Saturday, and you shouldn't call Jesus. You should call him Yahweh. And I just don't know how to respond to him.
All right. Well, why don't we start with the name of Jesus? Jesus, the word Jesus, as we say it in English, is just an anglicization of the name that Jesus has, which is pronounced something along the lines of Yeshua. And that is derived from, or very closely, this very similar name to Joshua, as we would render it into English. So it's just the English version of that actual name that Jesus has. Jesus' name was not Yahweh. Yahweh is a modern twist on an ancient riddle, and the riddle we can see in Exodus chapter 3, where when Moses meets God in the form of the burning bush, Moses is giving a bunch of excuses as to why he can't be the guy that God sends back to Egypt to rescue the people. And one of his excuses is, well, when I go back there, they're going to ask me who sent you, and I don't know your name. So the Lord says, tell them I am sent you. I am who am is the way it's commonly translated. So that in Hebrew is rendered in four consonants that we in English would put as YHWH. So there are no vowel markings in there. The vowel markings and other diacritical marks in Hebrew only came many, you know, millennia later after this event. And so the Jews, when they would read or write for that matter, they knew what the vowel markings, or they knew rather what the vowels were to be inserted between the consonants. So they would just know how to pronounce a given word. So in the case of that, what's called the tetragrammaton, the YHWH, nobody knows how to pronounce it. In fact, even to this day, Religious Jews will not even say the word God. They say Hashem, which means the name, referring back to Exodus chapter 3. So they won't even say the word God as a descriptor of God, because they take this commandment to not use the name of the Lord your God in vain so seriously. So they refer to him as Hashem, the name. So point being is that for your friend to say that Jesus' actual name was Yahweh, that's just nonsense, because you would not name a child and expect to live in that culture. You would not name a child with the name of God. In fact, to be stoned to death was the punishment that was reserved for those who took the name of the Lord in blasphemy or even just in a frivolous way. So I think we can quickly dispatch that issue. So the second one would be, I think it was the Sabbath day, right? Worshiping on Sunday. Okay. So keep in mind that it is true that God did indeed in the commandments, and we can read those in Exodus chapter 20, he did indeed say that the commandment to keep holy the Sabbath day was something that we would have to do because it was one of the Ten Commandments. But you'll notice that the church early on began to distinguish itself from Judaism by observing that commandment, not foregoing the commandment, not ignoring the commandment, but by transferring the observance of the commandment from the last day of the week, the Sabbath, to the first day of the week, Sunday. And those in the early church who wrote about this topic commented on it being done as a way to identify with Christ who rose from the dead on Sunday. So the victory over death and hell that Christ won for us on the cross was celebrated by the Christians going to Mass on Sunday. And that's where you begin to see the transference of the obligation to keep holy the Sabbath day to being keep holy the Lord's day. So it was a distinguishing factor between early Christianity and Judaism. It was Christocentric, focusing on what Jesus did on the day of his resurrection, as opposed to simply merely resting. It included that. So the observance of keeping holy the Lord's day includes resting and all the things that were part of a correct understanding of that commandment. So it was not done away with. It was just simply transferred to the other day. And the church has the authority to do that. So Jesus gave the church the authority to bind and loose. And this is one of the things that the church decided to do. Now, it's interesting too, and maybe if your friend, I don't know if he's Seventh-day Adventist or what his views are, but especially if he's Seventh-day Adventist, you could point out to him that in the Old Testament, long before the Ten Commandments, God commanded the ordinance of circumcision. And so when he gives this ordinance, he says that this is something that will be an eternal covenant. It's something that must be done for all generations. It's not something optional. It's something that is necessary. And you read about this in Genesis chapter 17. So when God is giving this covenant or establishing this covenant with Abraham, he says, I will maintain my covenant with you and your descendants after you throughout the ages as an everlasting pact to be your God and the God of your descendants. Now, this is in the context of him saying that you have to practice circumcision. Verse 9, God also said to Abraham, on your part, you and your descendants after you must keep my commandment, my covenant, rather, throughout the ages. This is my covenant with you and your descendants after you that you must keep. Every male among you shall be circumcised. And he repeats this a few times, including in verse 13. Thus my covenant shall be in your flesh as an everlasting pact. If a male is uncircumcised, that is, if the flesh of his foreskin has not been cut away, such a one shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. And again, he repeats the emphasis on the everlasting nature of this covenant. Well, unless your friend accepts and practices, or at least practiced, this ordinance of circumcision, he's got a problem. And that would be that the, say, Seventh-day Adventists and others who appeal to a Sabbath worship as opposed to a Sunday worship, they have to account for the fact that God gave an earlier commandment to Abraham for circumcision, and they don't practice that. They don't say, well, you know, we don't do that anymore because Jesus said we don't have to do it. because Jesus nowhere said that you don't have to circumcise. That was a decision of the church. So, Emmanuel, my reason for going into this is to give you a parallel that you can use in your conversation to show that the church had the authority to replace circumcision with baptism. In essence, it fulfilled what circumcision only symbolized. The baptism actually accomplishes what circumcision only symbolized, and the church had that authority in Christ to make that change. So it didn't spurn the commandment of God, rather it transferred the observance to a different form. And Jesus didn't say to do that, the church did. And almost certainly your friend agrees with the church without even realizing it. You see how that parallel can help?
Yes, very. And then I got one more friend. He's non-denominational. He used to be Catholic, but then he got married to a girl who's non-denominational, and he started going to her church, and he's actually like a minister there now. So like one time he was like, oh, come. And I was like, okay, I'll come, you know, just to support him a little bit, even though I didn't want to really. So I went, and they passed out these like little cups of like, almost like you got to rip off the little paper and then you drink it. And it was, that's like their wine. I was like, no way. I put mine on the chair next to me and I didn't want to take it because I don't know. I was just a little nervous.
No, you were right not to. You were right not to. Catholics are not permitted to receive quote unquote communion at a non-Catholic church. And I'm referring here specifically to like Protestant churches. It's not permitted because you have the real thing as a Catholic. You have Jesus really and truly sacramentally substantially present in what appears to be the bread and the wine. Anything else, anywhere else, is merely a symbol, and we're not to partake of that because we have the fullness of the truth. We're supposed to receive Jesus that way. So you did it in ignorance. I'm not saying you are ignorant. I'm just saying that you didn't realize. Yeah, but you did the right thing, though, to say no.
Is there any book I can give my friend, like, so maybe he can come back to being Catholic?
Yeah. I mean, tons of good books out there. One that has had a really good track record of reaching people like your friend, it's called Surprised by Truth. It's got 11 testimonies of people who used to be just like he is, you know, convinced of some version of Protestantism. And in most cases, they did not like the Catholic Church at all. And yet, one by one, they all wound up becoming Catholic. And they tell their stories in the first person in this book. And I've seen miracles happen when it comes to people. Now, full disclosure, I edited that book long ago. But I have a feeling if you were to give a copy that it would have a good effect. Now, you can, I'm not trying to sell you a book. I mean, you can get a used copy online for a buck or two. So, I mean, no money in my pocket. But it would be a good resource you could give to somebody else.
Okay, and I got one last question if I can squeeze it in. So that friend that I was talking about, he said, we're not all God's children, but we are all God's creation.
Well, he's true in a sense. If by children he's referring to being heirs of the Father, co-heirs with Jesus Christ, by being adopted sons and daughters of the Father, that is true that the only people for whom those appellations properly apply would be those who have been baptized. So in the strict sense, that is certainly correct. But in a broader sense, and I don't know how he meant this, if in a broader sense he means that, you know, all human beings are creations of God, that's certainly true. And if you want to think in terms of sons and daughters of God, because we're, the Bible tells us that God made us in his image and likeness, so in a sense we are sons and daughters of God in a generic sense, but in a strictly Christian sense, in terms of regeneration and baptism, it, not everybody is a son or daughter of God in that sense, only those who have been baptized. And I'll have to leave it at that. You got four questions out of me, Emmanuel. That's a record, I think. So we're going to put a mark on the wall. That's the Emmanuel mark. We'll see if anybody surpasses that. But I do appreciate the phone call. Thank you. A lot of interesting stuff. Cyrus, I think I told you the story before of that book, Surprised by Truth. I've told us a couple stories about that book from what I recall. But the one that just amazes me every single time I think about it is the time that a woman came up to me and I was at a speaking event. And she pointed to the book on the table, the book table. And she says, that book brought me into the Catholic Church. And I love hearing stories of converts. I'm a student of the process of conversion because it's so mysterious and so powerful. So I asked her, I said, well, what happened? She said, well, and you know what? I'm getting ahead of myself. I need to tell you one story before I tell you that story. It's all the same story, but I got to tell you one part beforehand. I could tell you're biting your nails, Cyrus. You're so anxious to hear this story. So here's the preamble to that before I get back to that lady. This would have been around 1995 or thereabouts. And that book had just come out about a year or so ago. And I get an email from a fellow who's at an evangelical Protestant university, Regent University in Virginia. And he's in law school and he's a Catholic guy. So he sends me an email and he says, hey, I want to say thank you for this book, Surprised by Truth, because I'm just getting beaten about the head and shoulders with arguments from my evangelical friends and fellow students here who are trying to get me to leave the Catholic Church and get quote unquote born again. So he said, somehow I found this book. It really helped me. And I'm just writing you a note to say thank you. So I responded. And on a lark, I said, well, what if I sent you a case of the book? No expense. I'll pay for everything. I'll pay for the books. I'll pay for the postage. All I ask is that you distribute these books. And the guy said, he wrote back. He says, yeah, sure, whatever. So he told me where to send them. And I sent a box of books, 44 copies. And I really, to this day, don't remember whether or not I ever heard from him again. I don't think that he and I communicated after that. So what happened was nothing. I sent the books out and forgot about it. And years went by. And I mean, maybe, I don't know, 10 years or more went by. And fast forward now, I'm at that speaking event, and this woman comes up to me. And she points at that book and she says, that book brought me into the Catholic Church. Are you still with me, Cyrus?
Sure.
Yeah, I can tell.
Right.
This is instructive, Cyrus. Pay close attention.
Okay.
Yeah. So she says, that book brought me into the Catholic Church. I said, great, what happened? So she tells me the story. She says, well, about 10 years ago, I was in law school at Regent University. And I was a Protestant. And there was this guy, Catholic guy. And, you know, we were giving him the business because we thought he needed to leave the Catholic Church, et cetera, et cetera. One day he shows up in class with his box of books. And it was a box of that book. She said, he gave me a copy. And he gave everybody in the class a copy. And she said, it was really weird because I was convinced the Catholic Church was wrong about just about everything, but she says eventually when I read through the book, it began to open my mind, and eventually it changed my mind, and eventually she became a Catholic. So for me, that was a real amazing breakthrough, because for all those years I had never known what happened with that box of books. So a few years after that, I told that story at Franciscan University's Defending the Faith Conference. I speak at that every year, every summer. And I told the story, and there was some oohs and ahs, like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And so I sat down when my talk was over, and during the intermission, a gentleman came up to me, and he says, you know that story you told about the box of books? I said, yeah. He says, well, there's more to the story that you apparently don't know about. I said, really? Tell me. He says, well, I was in that classroom too. He said, I was an evangelical Protestant. And he said, I got a copy of the book, and it just completely changed my view of the Catholic Church. And he said, I wound up becoming Catholic. I said, oh my gosh, that's incredible. And then he pointed to the back of the field house. You know, it's 1,500 people in this room here. He pointed way to the back. He says, see that priest back there? I said, yeah. He says, he was studying to be a lawyer at this university. And not only did he find his way into the Catholic Church, he found his vocation to the priesthood as a result of that. And then he mentioned two or three other people that he knew of, that he knew also wound up becoming Catholic. So that was just an incredible double breakthrough for me, just to realize, and this is the reason I'm saying this story, because everybody listening right now, you can do something. You can say something. You could put a Relevant Radio bumper sticker on the back of your car. If you don't have one already, you should do that. You can post something on Facebook or Twitter. You can do something that could be just the thing that people around you, and maybe somebody you'll never meet in this life, needs in order to wind up having a conversion experience. God knows what those things are. You and I don't have to know what they are. But if you're like the sower of the seed in the gospel account that Jesus gives, you don't know where that seed's going to land. You don't know what kind of soil it's going to land on, do you? But if you're just busy out there, you know, hey, check out the Relevant Radio app. Here is a Relevant Radio bumper sticker. Here's a CD. Here's a book. Here's, you know, come to Mass with me. Whatever it may be, you're distributing the truth, not knowing where that seed is going to land. And the Holy Spirit, of course, is the master of the harvest, and he will see to it that those who are drawn to the Father will be drawn. So for me, that story about the books is very helpful because it's a reminder to me, and I hope it's useful to you, that it was just an afterthought. I just, in the moment, and maybe it was my guardian angel nudging me and saying, hey, offer to do this. And look what happened. So other miracles, I'm quite convinced, are waiting to take place if you are willing to just, in the moment, just do something, say something, give something. And you'll look back on it later. And I would not be at all surprised if in heaven you have people coming up to you and thanking you. Thank you for telling me about Relevant Radio. Thank you for giving me that CD, etc. All right. Well, I need to take a break, and we'll come back to more of your phone calls. Here's the number to dial, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio, the Relevant Radio app.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I was glued to the TV set. I think it was Wednesday nights when this TV show was on the air. Absolutely loved it. Loved it. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. That's the number to call to be on the program. And you can also send me an email by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Let's go now to Rebecca in Chicago. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. So my question is, I'm having an issue with my husband and in regards to sexual intimacy. We've been married to the Catholic Church for over 10 years, 12 years, I think, something like that. I forget. But we just had baby number 5, and he turned 1. And we have not been intimate in, I want to say, more than 8 months. And I really don't have any desires or wants. That's the last thing on my mind. I'm just always tired. And the thing that threw me is I started to try to find more, resources about it. And I was listening to this passage that talks about his marriage. And it said the woman's body is no longer just her own, but also her husband's. And the husband's body is no longer his own, but also his wife's. And that really, I'm having a really hard time understanding it, because to me, it's like, it feels like it's telling me, well, I'm just supposed to just, I don't know how to say it, but just lay there and take it. And with, I don't know, all the stuff we've learned in society and school, is like, it's my body. I get to say no. I get to say yes. And I don't know. We just had this discussion with my husband, and we didn't really settle anything, and I don't know what to do. I feel lost right now.
I can understand. So the first thing I need to do is just tell parents, if this is not a topic that's going to be suitable for children, and by that I would say, let's say certainly middle school and down, and maybe even younger high school years and down. So fair warning, be time to turn the radio down for a few minutes. Cyrus, go ahead and do the honors.
Ready, steady, go.
Okay, ready, steady, go. Fair warning. So, Rebecca, first of all, I want to empathize with you. I can only imagine. I mean, I've never had to bear and raise children and look after them at home the way you're doing. So I can only try to imagine how wearying that must be for you. And so you have my complete empathy when it comes to your, you know, you're just fatigued. And, you know, the idea of engaging in the activity that would lead possibly, but not necessarily, to other children probably makes you tired just thinking about it. So
yeah, and he's gone 14 hours a day, so I'm really
you're home alone
by myself,
right?
Basically.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You are.
I'm exhausted beyond my capabilities.
Right. So I want to establish, first of all, that you have my absolute empathy. And so this is something that it's a reality, and couples who experience this difficulty have to find ways to work around it. Simply put, and I think the verse that you're referring to is in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. I'll read the passage here. So it says in verse 3, the husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not rule over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not rule over his own body, but the wife does. Do not refuse one another, except perhaps by agreement for a season. And that's the season doesn't mean like spring or summer. It means for a time. Could be a day, could be a week, could be a month, could, you know, whatever the couple decides. But it mentions here, it should be only by agreement. So it can't be imposed by the husband to say, sorry, I'm done. We're not doing this anymore, because the wife has a right. As St. Paul says in verse 3, these are her conjugal rights. She has a right to this. And by this, I'm referring to the Marriage Act. The wife has a right to it. And the husband is not permitted to say no, unless there's some, now, obviously there are reasons where it would be appropriate to say no, illness, fatigue, all kinds of other possibilities, but he doesn't have an absolute right to say no forever, nor does the wife. So he says here in verse 5 that this should be done by agreement for a time or a season, that you may devote yourself to prayer, but then come back together again, lest Satan tempt you through lack of self-control. And then he says in verse 6, I say this by way of concession, not of command. So in other words, he's not commanding the couple to separate from marital intimacy. He's not saying you must separate for a time. You must separate by agreement and devote yourselves to prayer. But he's saying that you can do this if you want to. I'm not commanding you. I'm just saying that this is a concession that you can make to each other. So if the husband says, you know, I really would like this very much, but as a concession to my wife, because she's so tired, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be virtuous, and I'm going to be even heroically virtuous, as the case may be, and the same could be true for the wife. So in context there, two things I think are important to keep in mind. One is that you both have a right to this activity in marriage, and neither of you has the right to withhold this gift of marriage from the other outside of necessary reasons when, you know, it's just not appropriate. Honey, we're getting ready for mass right now. No. Or I'm sick, or I just had a baby, or, you know what I'm saying? So there are many reasons where this could be refused, but it's not something that can be refused absolutely at all times. I guess that's the distinction we need to make. So how do you deal with that? What's the solution? Well, I think, of course, natural family planning would be an important part of this. If you are so debilitated, as you are, from all of your work, you're exhausted, it's causing these other issues. Well, if you haven't already started doing natural family planning, I would encourage you to look into it, because it would be a way for you to at least not have that mental anxiety about wondering if we're going to get pregnant again. Because if you're practicing natural family planning and you're using the observation methods and you're charting and you can get a good a good handle on what your cycle is like. And that can be done over a period of several months. And it can, for most women, it's something that can be very, very accurate so that you know when ovulation takes place. And these may all be things that you yourself are well familiar with. So I don't mean to instruct you, quote unquote, on something that you may already know about. But there are people listening for whom this is new information. So maybe for their benefit, I'm talking about some of the specifics here. But with natural family planning, you would be in a position to at least not have to worry about the likelihood of conception during the fertile time. You just simply avoid the fertile time. And you can build days on either side of it to make extra sure. But what would happen is then you would have a sort of, I guess you could say, a moral certitude based upon the scientific evidence that the likelihood of conception is going to be very low. And that will make things a lot less nerve-wracking for you, I would think, and maybe so for your husband. And then the other thing I would mention, too, would be there perhaps may be ways that you can work around the fatigue factor and maybe, I don't know if you and your husband have a date night, you know, where every night of the week you have, or I'm sorry, maybe one night of the week, you have a day that's reserved for the two of you. You get a babysitter. Maybe grandma can come over and take care of the kids. And you go out and you have a romantic dinner and see where that leads. And very often it can lead to wonderful things. So there are creative ways that the two of you can work together to try to revive this aspect of your marriage. But I'll leave you with my final thought. And that would be, if you hearken back to your wedding vows, remember that the essence of the sacrament of holy matrimony is that you have freely given yourself to your husband, and he has freely given himself to you. So the essence of the marriage contract is consent, meaning that you consent, as he does too, to be you're his lawful wife. He's your lawful husband. And you consent to living together and sexual intimacy and bringing children into the world if God blesses you with children and all the things that are appropriate to married life. The essence of the marriage contract is that you publicly gave your consent to this and he publicly gave his consent to you. And in so doing, consented to you having these rights over his body and you having, or you consenting to him having these certain rights over your body. Now, these are not tyrannical rights. These are not rights that can be, you know, demanded at a moment's notice for any reason whatsoever. Obviously, this is something that has to be exercised in prudence and out of love. And if the husband realizes my wife is just so tired, it would be wrong of him to, quote unquote, insist on his marital rights. But at the same time, if the husband, let's say he's the guy who's always tired, he's the guy who's, you know, you said he's working 14-hour days or he's gone 14 hours. So let's say he comes home dragging in after a long day of work and he's dead beat and he just doesn't have any interest. And he just, sorry, honey, I'm tired. And if that goes on day after day, week after week, month after month, that would be a problem because his wife has a right to this aspect of marriage. And so that means that he has the duty to do what he can to fulfill that as best he can. So there's an accommodation that has to take place out of love and care for the other person and taking those things like fatigue into account. So that would be my suggestion, would be the two of you together talking about it, planning, date night, NFP, babysitter, be creative, be proactive, do it out of love, do it out of care for each other, communicate as much as possible on these issues, and all other things being equal. And I'm not a marriage counselor, so I don't presume to offer therapy or anything that the counselors can do. But having been married for 41 years now, I know a little bit about how these things work. And at least in my experience, my sense is that if you and your husband approach it that way, out of love and respect for each other and consideration and recognizing that you each have a right to this you'll find a way to make this work. And you ask God, of course, to help you, and he will help you. And doors that might seem closed right now will open. And opportunities that might seem non-existent will suddenly come into existence. I do believe that. So those are my, you know, my layman's advice coming from somebody who's been married. But I think that if you try those things, you'll begin to see some improvement. And I guess I'll leave it at that, only because I have to take a break. But Rebecca, I hope some of that or all of that will be helpful to you, I pray. And I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this.
Today's programming sponsored in part by St. Gregory Recovery Center. More information about their Catholic-centered recovery from substance abuse is available at relevantradio.com/stgregory.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
The March for Life, as you know, coming up, and I don't know if you're going to be there physically, but you can be there in spirit through our hashtag Fast for Life campaign. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com/fast, and you can let us know how you're planning to be in solidarity with all the unborn babies, as well as their moms and dads, and also in respect and honor for those unborn children who were killed through abortion over the years, legalized abortion, that is. You can let us know how you plan to fast, maybe fasting from music or fasting from alcohol or fasting from food or fasting from, you know, things that you would like to stop doing. I'm seeing people saying that they're fasting from gossip and other things like that. And we even have here some examples of what some of the kiddos are saying. And I'd like to get to some of those here as well. Let me see if I've got some of those handy here. Some of the kids are saying what they're going to fast for. And that's very edifying if you ask me. Some people, for example, Karen in Buffalo, New York, she says, I will refrain from reading news websites. That might be a really good idea, you know, because too much of that can make you really tense and angry. Eileen from Schenectady says, only having one meal on Friday, and I'm giving up TV all day on Friday. That's a real sacrifice for a lot of people. So well done, Karen and Eileen. And you can participate as well. Just go to relevantradio.com/fast. Now, when you do that and you let us know how you're planning to fast and use the hashtag Fast for Life on your social media posts, we will be more than happy, and we will send you immediately an e-booklet on the bigger picture about what you and I can do for helping overthrow Roe versus Wade, a revolution of love, and also, you know, the whole idea of being in solidarity with the people who are so marginalized, like unborn babies. That's yours for free, absolutely free, no questions asked, no strings attached. But to get it, go to relevantradio.com/fast. Let's get over to Patrick now. And let's see. I'm sorry. We'll get to Patrick in a minute, to Denise in California. Good morning, Denise.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You were speaking just now to that lady about being intimate with her husband.
Yes.
I'm going to try to stay calm here. I've been in a marriage for 40 years, and most of it's been pretty bad. Some, a lot of mental and emotional abuse. And I just heard her call, and I thought, oh, my God. You know, I mean, we live separate lives now in the same house. Mm-hmm. It's really sad. And I just don't know if, you know, so there's none of the intimacy, and I don't care to ever be close to him. He's cruel. Mm-hmm. And it's just unkind, and I just can't imagine having to do that. And
you've been married 40 years, you say, Denise?
Yep.
Has he always been this way, or has it become this way? Yeah.
He's always been verbally. He's been terribly verbally abusive and emotionally as well.
Ever physically?
I've put up with it. No. No.
Okay, that's good.
No. I wouldn't put up with that. No.
Okay, so you're living under the same roof, it sounds like, but he doesn't talk to you, or he just only talks as much as necessary?
Oh, yeah, but he talks only when necessary, and, you know, he's just mean. He's just like, sometimes he's really mean, and he's just out of the blue, and it happened this morning, and it just set me up for kind of a rough morning. And then I heard that lady call, and I'm like, oh my God. And I've thought about it, you know, in terms of the intimacy and not, you know, mm-hmm. ever. I mean, I would have to say no if, I mean, I'm just like, no way. I don't want to be share myself with someone that treats me like that. It's just not, right. I can't do it.
Well, and see, you have a reason. You have a just reason for saying no, because the wife does not have to, neither the wife nor the husband, but in this case, as the wife, you do not have to, as the phrase goes in Catholic moral theology, render the marriage debt, as it's referred to so clinically. You know, you're not obligated to render the marriage debt when you have an abusive husband who's making your life miserable the way he does. Yeah.
That's good to know. That makes sense.
And, you know, I didn't mention that in my earlier conversation, so I'm really glad that you brought it up now, because it's important. It's an important part of the bigger picture. So
yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Now, if things changed, and I don't know what the likelihood is, I mean, with God, all things are possible, right? So maybe your husband might have a conversion. And if things changed, then it would be different, in which case then the marriage... Yeah, so then the marriage debt becomes something that you not only can render, and I'm using terms like this only because we have younger people listening, you know.
No, I get that, yeah.
Yeah. And then it becomes life-giving and loving, and it becomes wonderful again, as opposed to a duty or an obligation or a debt. Nobody likes to have to, you know, do those things. So my thought would be, first of all, to see if there's a way to salvage the situation. What about a retrovi weekend or a marriage encounter weekend? Would he be open to that?
Maybe. We could try, but he's turned it down before when he first really started going in a bad way, you know, when he left the bedroom, he left our room, and I tried to talk about it then, and he flat out said no. So I've tried before to do that, and I haven't recently, just because I don't have the energy to give to it, and COVID and everything has made so many things difficult. I just like, no, I mean, if the time came and it just was, you know, a good idea, well, maybe I would broach it to him again, but I don't think he's in that mode. I don't think he really gives it a darn. I truly do not. I think he's happy with the way things are, and he's perfectly, he doesn't care. So, you know, that's
that. It's hard to imagine a spouse, you know, becoming that way, but it does happen. So, I mean, you don't need me to tell you that.
And
you're living that.
Oh, yeah. No, he's abandoned me in a lot of ways. And it's just basically financial partners at this point. And that's about it. You know?
Is there any danger to you beyond just the verbal, you know, meanness and things? I mean, there's no physical harm that you're worried about, is there?
No, no, I'm not. I'm not concerned there. No, I'm not concerned there. And if I was, I would be doing something more about it, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad our children are grown and out of the house, because they lived through it too, and it has hurt them, you know. But
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Anyway, I just really wanted to, and you cleared it up for me, and that makes me feel a lot better, because I just can't do it. So it's very helpful to hear that.
My heart goes out to you. It really does. I hope that maybe there will be an open door that you and he can walk through to a retrovi weekend. Helpourmarriage.org is the website for them. And they specialize in helping couples.
It.
Yeah, it might be worth checking into. They have weekends all over the place.
Yeah. You know? I'll try. If it feels like we could do that, yeah, I'd be willing to. So maybe
that's
we'll
beautiful.
See what happens.
Yeah, I would encourage that, and keep this in mind. And maybe Denise, because I'm sure in your heart of hearts, if I had to guess, you would love to have a marriage restored to what it could be and should be, right? I mean, that would be your heart's desire, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So my suggestion would be, in your prayers, just ask the Lord for your heart's desire. You know, Lord, with you, all things are possible. This seems impossible right now. There's no solution on the horizon. But, Lord, you can change this if you want to. And I believe he does want to.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
That sounds all lovely. Right. I'll give it
I'm
a try.
I'm glad you called.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Denise.
Thank you. I'm glad you're there.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hang in there, and God bless you. HelpOurMarriage.org. I want to make sure I have that right. Help for our marriage? I want to double check that. HelpOurMarriage.org is correct. HelpOurMarriage.org. The organization is called Retrovi. And yes, I know it's an unfamiliar word. It's a French word, which means to recover or rediscover something that, you know, has been lost. So if you are in that situation, doesn't necessarily have to be exactly that situation, but this is an organization. They have chapters, couples, you know, weekends all around the country. In fact, I'm just on their website right now, helpourmarriage.org. It's Catholic, by the way. There's a big map there, and it will just show you, like, all around the U.S. and even in other parts of the world where they have people who can help you. So I'm looking, let me look at California. Yeah, California's got tons of opportunities to go on a Retrovi weekend. So I understand them to be something that might start on a Friday evening and finish up on a Sunday. And they're designed in a retreat format for the husband and the wife to get deeper into whatever those issues are that are causing them such pain and maybe even making them feel as though their marriage is over. So this is not a weekend for couples who are just having a, you know, mild irritation or something. This is for couples whose marriages are really on the rocks. But that describes quite a few people. So please check it out if you find yourself in that situation. Again, it's helpourmarriage.org. 888-914-9149. Let's get over to Patrick now, as promised, in Prospect Heights, Illinois. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call. Kind of a total change of gears here. I'm sorry, you know, keep those
That's
women
fine.
In my prayers. And
we are equal opportunity anyway. Here.
So well, I was listening at the top of the hour of you were talking. I just heard very briefly about facial recognition, something about facial recognition.
Yeah. Well, that was with the IRS.
With the government or something. With the IRS. Well, I've been delivering packages for a big company. I don't know if I can say it on the air, but whatever. But
is it Amazon?
Independent.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah, it's not the Nile. It's not the Nile. So with this company that, okay, so Amazon, which, you know, like as an independent guy. So I'm driving around my own car, you know, delivering packages or whatever, you know, I'm in my spare time. Making a little extra money, whatever. So, but they recently, I mean, I just started doing it again, like the last couple months. They recently have, before you can pick up the packages, you have to take a picture of yourself. And, you know, it you know, does this, whatever it does, AI, you know, technology. It basically, it like scans your face.
Right.
And makes sure it's you. And it totally, it creeps me out, honestly. It makes me feel like I'm a package or like a robot or something, you know? And I'm like, I don't know if I like this. So I just, you know, I sent some emails to them telling me like, or telling, you know, just expressing my point of view. Like, this is weird. Like, you know, can I opt out of this? Because look, they already like scan your driver's license when you get there, you know?
Right.
So it's like, why do you need this extra? And then they're like storing my image as like their own property. It's really weird. I mean, I don't like it, you know. So I'm pretty much thinking like I'm done with that. But I just wanted to get your, you know, your take on it, I guess.
Well, I am of a divided mind on this issue. From the standpoint of, do I like it? No, I don't like it. I don't like the fact that we're under constant surveillance. You roll up to any major intersection anywhere in the country. It's certainly true where I live in Ohio. There are cameras at every intersection, and there are cameras everywhere. And I don't like that. I don't like being constantly surveilled. I'm sure, as you mentioned, that there is probably facial recognition software that's, you know, everybody who passes through these cameras and is scanned, their images bounced up against the database, and they're, you know, is this guy a bad guy or what? So I know that this is going on, and it's increasing. You can't really get away from it. So I'm with you in the sense that I don't like it either. But the other side of it is, I must admit, I'm resigned to it. I'm resigned to it. This is the world in which we live. I'll give you an example. This is a parallel. Whenever the Social Security system was rolled out and everybody had to get, you know, the Social Security number assigned to them, there was a time when for some people that was the limit. No way. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to take a Social Security card. I'm not going to be assigned a number. Some people thought it was the 666 of Revelation 13. And of course it wasn't. But the fact is now it's commonplace. Everybody's used to it. You have a Social Security card. You have a number. It's your number. And we just live with it. And I think this is kind of like that, where it's inevitable. It's not desirable, but it's inevitable. And because it's inevitable, and I realize you can't fight City Hall on something like this, opting out is no longer an option. Even though I don't like it, I don't see any way around it. So for my own mental hygiene, and I'm just sharing my own view, Patrick, here, I don't get worked up about it anymore. Because if I want to live an everyday life, there are some things that, whether I like it or not, I have to live with, this being one of them. So I sympathize with you. I empathize with you, but I don't see any way around it. I wish I could give you the last word, Patrick, but I ran out of time. Thanks for sharing that. Stay safe out there on those roads. I'll be right back with hour 3 right after this.